I'm a very specific background.
Yeah.
And this is something beautiful that, yeah, such an institution recognized my work and my presence into this film industry as, because when you're coming from music, you're scared to be a one-hit wonder. I don't know. I don't know if my movie is a hit, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You just have one film and then you just disappeared and that's about it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Celebrating Cinema. That was filmmaker Balogi speaking with me before the interview. We were discussing the recent news that he'll be the co-president of the jury for Best First Film category at Cannes Film Festival later in May. You can already hear what an honor it is for him. It was only last year that his feature debut, Auguste, premiered at Cannes, so it's a real nod of recognition. Like Balogi mentioned, coming from music, there's a certain pressure of being a one-hit wonder. But if you're familiar at all with Balogi's music, you'll know that filmmaking only seemed like a natural evolution for this hip-hop artist, who has always been very visual and poetic in his work. Raised by the do-it-yourself mentality of hip-hop, you just have to watch his videos like Zombies and Bleu de Nuit to see how music complements his film language. Coming from the Congolese diaspora, there was a certain expectation for Balogi's film to be a biopic about his own story and returning to Congo. Instead, Balogi was much more interested in the story of outcasts, a familiar feeling that's followed him throughout his life, simply by the connotations of his name, which means evil sorcerer in Swahili. It would be the equivalent of having the name Demon in English. Auguste initially starts by following Kofi, who is visiting his family in Congo from Belgium with his white wife. But it's here that Balogi shifts our expectations by introducing Paco, Tshala and Mujila, all protagonists of this story as well, and also outcasts in some way, dealing with their own grief. It's these stories that are often never told. As Balogi will mention later on, it's often the winner's story of someone making it out that's very often the focus. Balogi's style itself is rooted in magical realism, a very visual and poetic style that helps to translate a feeling. Auguste is a film that encourages you to experience rather than simply to watch. All elements I think that are shared with hip-hop, and something I wanted to ask him later. But first, I started with asking Balogi his first memory of cinema.
Ah, very, very easy. Midnight Express.
Really?
Yeah.
Where and when?
Could
you remember that so clearly?
Yeah, I remember that super clearly because they shown that movie in the afternoon on Belgium national TV.
Ah.
And I was a kid just arriving from Congo.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing that film that I never haven't seen since then.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And for some reason, the music, the soundtrack, keep from Giorgio, now I forget his name, keep following me everywhere. Because it gets sampled so many times.
Have you ever come back to it in terms of with your work or with your music?
Not really, but that movie has a major impact on me, yeah.
And can you maybe try to explain what kind of impact it is? Or why seeing it has stuck with you?
Yeah, so Midnight Express is from Alan Parker and the music is from Giorgio Moroder. Basically, one of the most innovative composer on electronic music. And this music stays, the end credit song stays in my mind for years. And every 5-6 years, there was a hip hop song that sampled something from Outkast, from this West Coast group, Hieroglyphics, Tupac, whatever.
Oh, wow.
Everybody sampled them. Sample something from him from that movie.
And you've never watched it?
No.
Wow.
And I remember such a scene and being, you know, when there is some little sexuality and you're trying to sneak in, pretending you don't watch. It was Yeah, this present situation, yeah, it's really impacted me.
Yeah, so it probably leads to my next question of how, so you're a hip hop artist, how music influences your filmmaking, but how filmmaking also influences your music. Because if people aren't familiar with your work, Zombies and Bleu de Nuit,
yeah,
are very stylistic, and a lot of what you see in Auger is already, there are elements in those music videos. So I wondered how did you evolve from being a musician to also wanting to tell your story through film?
Oh, I've been trying to do film since 2012, so it's not something new. But it started for me with working with Nicolas Karasatanis. And a duo called Spike and Jones, of two commercial filmmakers. Yeah. We worked together, and there was something in the way that Nicolas Karasatanis is this incredible DOP. It was playful. It was not something based on knowledge. It was just to snap with his camera and choosing the angle. This is the angle I'm gonna, that's how I'm gonna frame it. And I was like, wow. It's beautiful. It's not that technical. It's not like a mystical word when you need to have and you could crack it, the code, just like I do with music, because I never learned solfège. Learning how to read music, you still can compose without knowing how to read. And when you cross that barrier, it's something fantastic. Then you get some certain type of freedom.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, I can do it.
Because you also have synesthesia.
Synesthesia,
which is where you see through color,
yeah,
right? Or you associate.
Or you associate colors with sound.
Yeah.
With tonality.
Yeah. So you already have quite a visual mind.
Yeah, it's been. I think with my hip hop group, everything was connected to a certain color, to a certain mood. Everything was associated between sound and colors.
Yeah.
It was really inspiring working like this.
I was reading an interview you did, and you may not remember this, but it was from 2011.
Okay.
It was with The Guardian, and you said how when you first listened to hip hop, it was like listening to a soundtrack of your life, or it was the first time you heard music speak about you and your friends, or the life that you and your friends have.
That's true.
And I wondered, if hip hop is the soundtrack, what are films like yours then? Because to me, there's hip hop has always been the soundtrack to people's lives. But I feel that visually, there has been a gap or something missing.
Yeah.
And I feel perhaps you're working to try and add something to that space, or to build on from the soundtrack. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally, totally. It totally makes sense. I'm obsessed with this idea, and I think hip-hop is the backbone to everything I'm doing.
Mm.
And just to make, I'm not gonna answer directly,
yeah,
but there is a real link. It's, most people just keep telling me, how can you do costumes, art directions, music on your film? And I don't think it's something spectacular.
Yeah.
Because coming from hip hop, you just part of a movement, you dance, you do graffiti, you sample, you scratch, you MC.
Yeah. You do it all yourself.
You do everything.
Yeah.
And nobody question it.
Yeah.
It's not even, and it's a mentality. It's just normal. It's I had some friends. What led me to hip hop, because I'm coming from quite strange background, it's the hardcore scene.
Mm, really?
And there was this big straight edge.
Yeah.
And they were doing some, you know, some social brunch on the weekend, inviting all the people, all the illegal.
Yeah.
They were doing a lot of action for the community, without even asking TV, radio to be there, press, nothing. They just do it from the heart.
Yeah.
And these people teach me this whole thing. They were going on the road, selling the album themselves, no copyright agreement. They sell it, they keep going on the bus, and they're doing 45 two-stop.
Wow.
And they're coming back, and they all have deal in every city with the community. And you have so much to learn from these people. They teach me everything.
Do you think hip-hop and film then have a similar essence?
I think for me, it's, let's say, the writing, which is my first job, and probably it's going to be my last. because I start as a writer, as writing poem, and that's drew me to rapping. But there is something with the rapping, it's storytelling. So I grew up with Nas, and Nas was all about storytelling. I think of a song called One Love, it's telling a story. And with the hip-hop culture, and it has an introduction, it develops, and it has a conclusion. When I started writing a script, I thought it was just longer, but the same logic, same dynamic. You have to see the big change, your big picture, and you create the map, and then you can play with everything around it, and that's fantastic.
Another similarity I see in hip-hop, or between hip-hop and film, so in hip-hop, you have sampling, which is sort of like reworking of classics and trying to add your own spin on it. And if we now go to Auguste, one of the first moments I think of is, maybe you already know where I'm going with this, but is the Tuki Buki reference with the skull head on the motorcycle. Yeah, maybe you could talk a little bit about sampling and film, but...
This is honestly a pure accident.
Really?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Because pure accident.
Tuki Buki is also a magical realist film.
And yeah, I know. But that was crazy. Not the idea, because normally that was supposed to be a horse.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're supposed to be cowboy on the horse, you know, and that when you look at the window, you just see the leg, you don't see the person talking to him. But that day we had a lot of problems, so we could not shoot the scene as expected. So we ended up being like, let's do bikes instead of four horses. And then we managed to restructure the whole scene like this, and I was like, let's do a dedication, just on the spot. Let's make it like Tuki. And that's what happened. But it really was not part of the script or whatsoever.
Funny, but to me, because that's when Kofi arrives in Congo. And to me, it's like that sort of, he's now left Belgium and now he's going off into this world. So I thought it was a really...
But it's also interesting because when I thought of it, I was like, maybe it's good to say that it get confronted to an African culture that also has access to cinema.
Yeah.
Which from a European point of view, we think like, this is only us.
Yeah. Yeah. Is Tuki Buki a film you often return to, or?
Yeah, and especially then I received an award from his family.
No way.
4 years ago, so I talked with his grandson, and we just get along, and he gave me some masters to watch again.
Wow.
And I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his
work. Big fan, same thing.
But maybe we can explain the premise of the film, what it's about, and how you came to this story.
Oh, I don't know. I wrote like three scripts before that one that never get funded. So I was a little bit desperate. No, more than a little bit. and when I lost my dad, I remember being... thinking like, okay, you know what? Let's go. So I remember seeing the criers and being like, I could not help myself for not seeing them crying so much. Then it become a fountain. And I was feeling so guilty to have that thought while I was supposed to be with everybody and being in that moment. I could not escape it. And I went back home and I said, you know what? Let's write something about this. And I wrote the first part of the script in 6 weeks. And to be honest, from the 6 weeks, but every day, like 6 days a week, just like writers do.
But still, there was something you had to get out of you.
And I was like, okay, let's go. Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. But what is the story about?
Grieving, forgiveness, reconciliations.
Yeah. Oh, I mean more the plot.
Oh, the plot.
Yeah.
For me, I suddenly thought, let me play with this whole idea of if you're a musician, you have to do a movie of a musician. So you have to tell your own story, your own point of view. And let's do like an autobiographical kind of film. Mm. So this is where people keep pushing me for 10 years. I'm like, nah. So I had this idea, like, maybe let's just play with the characters of Koffi, who's coming back to Congo after 18 years and trying to reconnect with his family. But then let's switch the point of view, because they expect me to do this exile film back to your country, just like literature has 500 examples of this type of story. But I was like, if we go there, it's a trap, because you always talk about the privilege. And if you do a movie about the privilege, nothing will change. So that's why I wanted to switch to Paco as his mirror. That's why I wanted to play with the sister that we play with the Brejdel theory about two women, when two women are on screen, if they talk about a man, etc. And I wanted to have men talking about a woman, which is a sister that you only discover. And I wanted that the mom, you hate her, and then you understand that she's the first victim. So I had this structure from the top, and I just built around it. But nobody wanted me to tell that story.
Because when you say privilege, people might be a bit confused, right? But I think the thing you keep coming back to is that Koffi is someone who comes and he has a passport. And that passport,
I will never give up from this, because it's so important.
And I think people also, perhaps, I also didn't immediately think of it, but you're very right in the sense that it is a, I think you'd say it before, like a patriarchal story of how it's always the winner.
Who tells the story.
And again, it might seem maybe somewhat absurd that we're talking about the winner in this respect of someone who's been estranged from their family. They've been cut off from their culture, but in the end, like you said,
but it's a matter of point of view. I think I try to respect beliefs, and their point of view is extremely valid.
Yeah,
you know, if there is blood on a baby face, there must be something weird. So it's normal. So their point of view is valid. His point of view is valid to a certain point, but he's not the victim that we think it is.
And when you talk about the blood on the face, you're obviously referring to sort of these clashes of cultures.
Yeah, of culture, yeah.
I found the mother's story, Mujila, very telling, because she's sort of quiet throughout and she's sort of kept within or around the house for a lot of the film until the end, and yet the film ends with her perspective. Maybe you can also speak about this, how you're wanting to sort of put focus more on the woman's story here, or the mother's story, because I think it's also something that gets forgotten about, that often in this patriarchal world, the matriarchy is within the home.
Yeah, the matriarchy is the home.
Yeah.
The patriarchy is a society.
Yeah, and people may not know, but you also made this amazing album for the film, where you actually made four albums for each character. And I was listening to your song with Jamila Woods.
Yeah.
And oh man, after watching the film, like, it really moved me, because listening to the song after, I was like, this song encapsulates everything
about her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wondered how that helped you to tell the story, sort of creating these albums. And
I really ask everybody on this record to respect the point of view of the characters. And I remember with Jamila, I said, because I think there is a Bruce Springsteen song called Too Old to Die Young. And I thought it was nice. It was on my sketches, and I was like, because I worked a lot on the, writing the albums, I came across this subject matter that really bring me to a place I didn't expect. It's a song about moms feeling jealous of their daughters. And it's a song called Porcelain with Falana. And writing about this makes me understand a lot of things. Because you see a reflection of yourself.
Yeah.
And that mirror also shows you something of what you become.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's confronting and you don't accept it. And it makes me understand certain moms' reaction on certain things. So I was like, it get me obsessed of the how women grow old and the society don't accept them as a body, as a physical body that can desire and be desirable to the opposition of a man that become more charming and seductive, yeah, getting old, which is very strange. And how desire for women is always objectified, so past a certain age, you don't represent the body anymore.
It's very narrow how we see.
Yeah, you just a presence and sometimes a voice or a comfort or an authority or something, just, but not seen as a complete human being, which, yeah, I thought it was extremely fascinating to talk about that.
Yeah, and I think that how you do that is also pretty, well, also the actress as well, because there's very little dialogue.
Yeah.
And they have to convey so much, or you have to feel like, because like you said, we're kind of like distant to her to begin with, because we're wondering why she's acting like this towards Kofi, yeah, and her son. But in the end, it's someone who can't really communicate how they feel,
or
express themselves.
I'm coming from dance, hip hop, that lead me to contemporary dance, capoeira. Then I did some tango, although I'm super tall. we did so much. So dance has something, the physicality of the body that can express a lot.
Yeah.
Even less dialogue.
And I think this is how magical realism plays into it, because I think you said when you were writing the scripts, people wouldn't understand when you would write something like, then the room filled up with tears or turned into a river.
Trust me, when they read this, they are like, what's wrong with this guy?
But it doesn't make sense, because to me, how else can you show grief other than through poetry or through...
They were really like, what's wrong with this guy? But you also have to know that we're living, especially Belgium, we're in the country of naturalistic films.
Yeah, yeah.
And we are really into this culture of really almost documentary approach.
We kind of expect to be told something or
in French they call it cinéma du réel.
Yeah.
So you're really close to, which is interesting. And for example, I talk with some producer about. We're talking with Alice Diop, which a filmmaker that I truly admire.
Saint-Omer,
and she has this slow pace. It's just like the Camera d'Or from last year. And somebody like me, when there is a scene where you open your luggage, you unfold your clothes, you put them on the dresser, I cut. But that's me. Because it's another pace. But she keep the whole scene. And I know that for film lover, it's something very important because it creates something really, a mood and etc. And it's a choice. And coming from hip hop, you go directly to the essence. And this is a cultural clash.
Yeah, but then I also think it's like in your work in hip hop, but I think what you're doing more broadly is you're trying to translate feelings.
Yeah.
And to translate that, you can only experience it rather than be told it.
Yeah, but it's interesting to see filmmakers working with a different pace.
Yeah.
And because it's a tradition in cinema that it's slow and you take time and the emotions and you follow, because people, for example, in France and Belgium, they before we released the movie, everybody told me, don't talk about choir film, ensemble film. because people get scared. That means too much character, it's a mess, I don't know where we're going. But I'm like, I don't know, Pulp Fiction, what is Pulp Fiction? It's an ensemble film. What is, I don't know, Babel? And there is so much, so much, but it's difficult to sell. It scares people.
You're fusing both African traditions with Western traditions very deliberately.
Yeah. So
you have a lot of Disney and other folklore like Hansel and Gretel, and also it's set around Easter. Maybe you could explain a bit why you've done that.
Yeah, because I wanted to also say that animism is central in Congo, but as much as Catholicism is centered to Congo, how can we structure the society, how can we impact our culture the same way that impacts European culture? And I think atheists are the majority in Europe, but we're still following the Christian calendar, etc. And we never ask their opinion, the atheist, which is very interesting as a society that we don't ask the majority.
Yeah.
It's mostly non-believers. And I thought it was something to play with and also to not create too much the idea of Tintin in the land of the savage.
So like with Hansel and Gretel, you're also referring to how, in a lot of these also Disney stories, it's often the female or the woman who is portrayed as the witch or with negative energy, which I think is quite smart to, because it could be very easy for a Western audience to take a sort of distant gaze and be like, oh, but that's in
that's Africa. Them, that's African, they're weird, they're savage, they don't have civilization.
Yeah.
Even some new content, even, I'm sorry for her, but even Barbie.
Yeah.
Something is totally wrong with Barbie because the characters, the more likable is Ken.
So
everything they try to build and to tell us, it doesn't work. Because at the end of the day, that's him.
Yeah, I found the Oscars really bizarre because you have Ken sing a whole song about Ken when it was a film about Barbie. But
yeah, but it's really interesting that it's supposed to be feminism.
Yeah.
But they don't do anything to make Barbie human.
Yeah.
Ken is human. At least he has a narrative arc that it makes him progress.
We identify with him more,
He progresses, he changes through the narrative. And that's scary. How sometimes you try to say something and your intention contradicts with your decisions in filmmaking.
How do you make sure that doesn't happen?
It can happen all the time. And that's why editing is super important, because it's all about finding the right balance.
Because we've also managed to get through most of this interview without actually explaining how Auger is all about your own relationship to your name as well in some way, in the sense that so Balogi, if I'm not mistaken, means sorcerer.
Yeah.
And had these quite sort of demon connotations when Congo was colonized, right?
Exactly.
And so these four characters are all marked by the devil in some way.
Yeah, they are all considered as outcasts. They are essentialized in a negative way. Even Mama Mujila at the very end, she's put out of her own house. And that's something that I will do for the rest of my life, as much as I will do poetry, is talking about being considered as a sorcerer while you don't decide the name that somebody else gave you. And you cannot be reduced to one thing, like your name. And to be honest with you, right after Ken, we went to Congo to present the movie, because the Congolese government, they were a little bit skeptical to help us in the beginning, and then they came to Cannes and they support the film, and then they went on the red carpet, the Congolese flag, make it viral in Congo, extremely proud of it, and we went to present the movie, and for the first time in my whole life, I heard people saying my name without feeling ashamed.
Really?
Without trying to just You know, I could go on the radio and they say, yeah, so we have the artist B-A-B-A-L-O-G-E, because they don't want to say
yeah.
it. Because they think they're invoking some bad spirits or you go to the airport and they're like, oh my God, boy, do you know what it means? So you always confronted to your name, and growing up, it's always been an issue, my name.
That must be very special though, to have made this film and then to, for that
it's
kind of.
It's super strange.
Yeah.
I still have to process this part.
Yeah, wow, and how is it? Because you were separated from the Congo and your culture,
yeah.
grew up in Belgium, but yet you came back and decided to make a film from within rather than from outside.
Yeah, but I came back since, very often since 2010.
Okay.
And yeah, there was a long moment I didn't went to Congo, and I had to reconnect, and it was a difficult path to reconnect with my Congolese identity. Yeah. It takes time, and it only worked the moment I decided that you don't have tried to blend in, you don't have tried to pretend you're local, just accept who you are.
Mm. Which I think this film also shows.
Because your identity can be multiple.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you are less Congolese than another one. You just have a different identity. And it's, you know, I have a mixed race, as you say in English, it's an awful word, but, and she always say, oh, I'm 50% black, 50% white. No, you 100 and 100. And the moment I accept that for myself, it's never been a problem.
Wow.
But it took me a moment to be like in that spirit.
And so was the making the film cathartic for you?
Sorry, cathartic?
Yeah, or not really?
I don't know if it's catharsis. I don't know. Probably everything I'm doing is
in some way, yeah.
In a way, I think we just try to reconcile. And at the same time, I'm not the biggest fan of Karl Lagerfeld. As stuff that he says in his life, and I'm like, dude, you're wrong. But I love his work. And he says something like, if you go to the therapist, you kill the artist in you.
Mm.
And in a way, yeah, I'm part of this team.
Mm. I haven't heard that before.
It's something interesting to think about. And yeah. I've never been to a therapist. And I think if you have answers, maybe you do something else.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because it's a mess, the puzzle, it's such a unconstructed world. That is, it's interesting to keep it like this.
I wanted to also touch finally on, like you mentioned before, you were the costume designer.
Yeah.
And how fashion also plays a key part in your film. But what I found interesting, maybe I'm wrong, but Kofi and Majila. They have similar
colors.
Yeah, they're like very pastel, neutral colors,
yeah.
and restricted yeah. clothing.
nicely.
Which, yeah, I thought was a really nice touch, because the rest, like T'Challa, is much more expressive, much more colorful.
Bright, colorful. Yeah.
So is Paco as well. But then you also infuse, again, we were talking about how you infuse Western culture. Sort of bring in the New Orleans parade yeah. style of dress as yeah. well.
For me, everything is triangle. Everything I do, yeah, maybe it's because I grew up with the Bills, the Chicago Bills. The triangle, everything is triangle. So
yeah.
everything is Africa, Europe, well, or more specifically Belgium, because I think Belgium has a big history of surrealism. So Belgium and US culture.
Yeah.
That's my triangle.
Yeah.
And I always go back to these three elements and playing with codes of this three part of the globe.
And I think you've mentioned before how every part of a film elevates the overall story
yeah.
that you tell.
Yeah, and I think the costumes are so important in
yeah.
the film. Of course, I will never get the Yorgos Lanthimos poor thing's budget. And when yes. I look at it, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm just like a baby, and I'm like, I'm in love with every shot. Everything
yeah.
costs millions, and and it's gorgeous. The costumes are gorgeous, and it's also beautiful to make it low key. I think it's something interesting, but you give attention to it, but you strip down everything. And I like to play with colors because of synesthesia, but also it helped every department. It helped the camera movement. So for example, with Mujila, since it's coming from something that I learned from Belgium, dentelle lace culture from Bruges, that they go to Congo and they teach them how to do it. And after 2 years, they were like, they're going to destroy and ruin all that. So let's do a lace with raffia. And the color is like this kind of like a terracotta beige.
Oh, wow.
Really earthy color. And I saw like, wow, let's do a dress for Mujila based on this. And let's build everything around her on that color tone. So you have to watch it several times, but the napkins, all the set, everything. And then it gives to the camera, let's say that we shot on a tripod for her. So the camera don't move compared to Paco, where the camera is on the shoulder and it's more hectic, more free. And so it helped us to create like a whole grammar based on the color, based on the dress. So the dress become the elements that guide everything else around it.
And maybe to end, other than securing a Lanfimos budget for your next film, what does the future hold for you?
Stop promoting a film? I will say, I'm working on a second feature, which I'm very passionate, which is very funny because it has a lot of Netherlands aspect.
Really?
Yeah. Which is, it's something that I'm working a lot on it for the moment. It's in my mind because I live in Ghent, on the Flemish side. And I'm very interested in the fact, it's cool because in 5 years we could maybe talk about this.
Yeah, I hope so.
And I'm very interested in it because people are afraid to disappear. That their culture, their tradition, their identity disappear in this global world.
Yeah.
And that they lose themselves. And I work on something based on Afrikaans. It's the South African culture and what it means. And a reverse affirmative action and I'm obsessed with it.
Well, I look forward to our conversation about that.
I'm obsessed.
And
you talk about football.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I look forward to that conversation.
Talk about footballs. I love footballs, so.
But I perhaps wanted to just end with a final quote from yourself.
Woo.
Again, I found, so in another interview you said you want to make music that is very African and very modern. And I think this was also in The Guardian. And then for NPR, you said...
2012.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then NPR, you said you want to make art that you're proud of and that lasts. And I think what you've done for music is what you're doing for film. And I hope that only continues.
I hope it lasts, but I don't control this.
Yeah. Well,
I don't control this. And it's the audience that decide if it lasts. And maybe take a generation to have recognition on your work. It's anyway, you have to do it because it's something that if you don't do it, you cannot breathe and live normally.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
After our conversation, I was left thinking, what would a film by Balogi look like with the same budget as Yorgos Lanthimos's Poor Things? I think it's something many of us would hope to one day see. But I was also thinking how I'd forgotten to take a photo with Balogi. Which is why if you follow us on our Instagram at Lab111, you'll see a great impromptu photo of myself with Balogi by the iconic canals after I managed to track him down by bike. If you haven't already, please go and watch Auger. I think it's something everybody will enjoy the experience of seeing. It's an incredible film that's showing here at Lab111. A link for tickets you can find in our show notes. If you haven't already, you can also watch Tuki Buki, which will be screening as part of our Road Movies program here in June, a film we mentioned in the conversation that is a big influence on both of us, it seems. You can also keep an eye out for upcoming interviews with Bertrand Bonello, director of The Beast, and Sean Price Williams and Talia Ryder for The Sweet East. If you haven't already, make sure to listen to our latest episode on whether AI is really going to take over cinema and why film depictions are so dystopian. Please make sure to leave us a review and share with a friend. If you want to get in touch, email us at celebratingcinema@lab111.nl. We always love to hear from you. This was a Lab 111 production, edited and produced by myself, music from Hugo Emazal, and artwork by Studio FFF. Thank you.